You're listening to audio from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, where we train students to preach the Word and reach the world. For more free resources like this one, visit www.swbts.edu/media resources.
I don't know about you, but even the most traditional Baptist, that kind of music will make you kind of wake up a little bit, and I think some of you might need that. In fact, I want to share a message with you from God's Word in Judges chapter 8 that will hopefully God will use to wake you up a little bit as well. In fact, I didn't change the message God had told me to share with you. It's been encouragement to me, and I'll share it with you, but I do think it was pretty ironic that the first person I saw on campus today when I walked up, and I didn't catch his name, but I just said, "Well, how you doing?" And he said, "I wish I could go to bed." So this one's really for him and anybody else that's had some all-nighters in recent days. But, in Judges chapter 8, of course, we read what happens after the most famous story of Gideon, and that is in chapter 7, of course. And we understand what's taking place with the great decrease of the crowd size that God was after in Gideon's leadership. But let me give you a larger perspective of what's going on in the time that precedes the era of the kings, and yet following this great exodus from Egypt, the people of Israel are accustomed to being in the mode of wandering. And now they're in the mode of putting down roots, settling in. People who had grown accustomed to being pioneers, you might say, are now finally possessors of the land that God had promised to them. This generation of Israel had grown up a little bit. They had matured a little bit, like some of us. Our wanderings have come to a close, and we've had to grow up just a little bit. Of course, many times family responsibilities and job responsibilities and bills will have a way of maturing us a little bit, even if inside we still are childlike. But remember, we're talking about a man here named Gideon who he had to grow up rather fast. God used Gideon to not only bring Gideon Gideon's own family back to God, but he also used Gideon to bring the entire nation back to God. But Gideon had to stand up. His first early fight was standing up to his own father, the sins of his own father, Joash, and who had built an altar to Baal right in his own backyard. And so Gideon was not unaccustomed to difficult times, but nonetheless, like many of us, we've grown up a little bit, and now we've been able to get comfortable in our maturity, to say the least. You know, Gideon and his men in chapter 7, Gideon and his 300 men had just won the battle over 120,000. And now all they're trying to do is finish him off. They're just trying to finish off the last little portion of 15,000 folks. But by the way, the odds are still 50-1. Of course, you just had a great victory, but the odds are still great nonetheless. And our lives are very similar. No matter what great mountains we've crossed, no matter what great difficulties we've come through, and no matter what great challenges, God's faithfulness has carried us through. When we face a difficulty in front of us, we still question, will we make it? And that's the tone of where we pick up this story. It's almost a dichotomy of the best of times and the worst of times at the same time. And yet we're so close to victory. We're so close to finishing the race. And yet it's taken so much out of us. We're just worn out. We're just weary. We just don't know if we're finally going to make it. We've done so much. Can't we just take a breath? We don't have enough energy to quite finish off the race. This is really for those here today and watching online who are weary but still winning. Those who are fainting but still fighting. Look with me in Judges chapter 8. In fact, let's do this just to wake a few of you up. Why don't you stand with me just for a moment and look at Judges chapter 8. And I'd like to just read a couple of verses. Verse 4 gives us opportunity to hone in on the word here. Verse 4 through verse 12. Gideon and the 300 men came to the Jordan and crossed it. They were, here's the word, exhausted. The New American Standard says weary. The King James says faint, but still in pursuit. He said to the men of Succoth, "Please give some loaves of bread to the people who are following me, these men, because they're exhausted, for I'm pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian." But the princes of Succoth asked, "Are Zeba and Zalmunna now in your hands that we should give bread to your army?" Gideon replied, "Very well. When the Lord has handed Zebah and Zalmunna over to me, I will trample your flesh on thorns and briars from the wilderness. He went from there to Penuel and asked the same thing from them. The men of Penuel answered just as the men of Succoth had answered. He also told the men of Penuel, when I return in peace, I will tear down this tower. Now Zebah and Zalmunna were in Karkar, and with them was their army of about 15,000 men, who were all those left of the entire army of the Kedemites. Those who had been killed were 120,000 warriors. Gideon traveled on the caravan route east of Nobah and Jogbah and attacked their army while the army was unsuspecting. Zebah and Zalmunna fled, and he pursued them. He captured these two kings of Midian and routed the entire army. The next several verses give us the response of what he, the action of what he'd responded. But move on with me to verse 22, and I want to show you a concluding thought. Then the Israelites said to Gideon after this great conquest was over, rule over us, you as well as your sons and your grandsons, for you delivered us from the power of Midian. But Gideon said to them, I will not rule over you, and my son will not rule over you. The Lord will rule over you. Look at verse 28. So Midian was subdued before the Israelites, and they were no longer a threat. And the land was peaceful 40 years during the days of Gideon. Thanks, you can have a seat. All Gideon wanted was some bread for his men. Surely his neighbors would at least find in their hearts the opportunity to be generous and give them some bread. These guys are exhausted, faint, weary, worn out, but still pursuing, still fighting, still winning. Not too long ago, I had a conversation with a veteran in Starbucks that I frequent, and of course I saw him in his gear, which helped me give opportunity to just initiate a conversation and to thank him for his service. Come to find out, Tyler had served two tours in Afghanistan. And I asked him, I said, tell me a little bit about what it's like to go off to war the second time. What's the difference? I mean, surely you know what you're expecting. You're geared up for that, and you're more prepared, and you're ready. And he said, you know, the greatest difference is, he said, I've learned how to handle battle fatigue. Christians, listen up. This is for us. We've got to learn how to handle battle fatigue. Still fighting when you feel like fainting. Remember Judges chapter 7? I wish we had time to preach 7, but everybody knows the story of 7. And if you don't, shame on you and go read it. But everybody skips 8, which is why we're honing in there. But in chapter 7, we learn so much. We learn how to be a warrior when we think that we're a warrior. We learn what God can do with so little. We see a massive display of God's provision. But in Judges 8, we learn how to win when we're weary. And if you've been in it for a long time, and that bell to the 15th round has just been rung, and you're about to start what you don't think you have the energy to finish, this is for you. You're a strong person. You've made it a long way, but you don't have the energy to swing one last punch. I want to give you three statements that you want to walk away with this morning that have encouraged me. Don't quit when you've almost won. Don't quit when you've almost won. I don't know what you're going through, but I have been where you are in very similar situations. And you so desperately want to be done. Done with the semester, done with school, done with your marriage, done with your ministry, done with your life. Don't quit, Christian, when you've almost won. Remember what Paul said in Galatians 6, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. There's a great deal of time lapse that occurs between sowing and reaping. And I don't mean to speak as a farmer. I know very little about it. But I do know enough to know that there is a significant amount of time from sowing to reaping. And Paul said that we are to hang in there and we will reap if we faint not. What that time frame means to me is seasoning, maturing, Even the Apostle Paul spent 3 years kind of removed, seasoning. Joseph had to take 14 years to grow up a little bit. And we've all gone through that seasoning, that wandering, that maturing in our life. But I'm here to tell you, if the reaping time came quickly after the sowing time, there'd be no weary time. And everybody would be a winner. If there was no lag time between the planting and the reaping, everybody could finish the race. Everybody would be a success. Every minister, every missionary, every pastor would set the bar so high. Weariness comes when the battle outlasts you. Weariness in your life right now is only coming because you're in a battle that's longer lasting than you physically feel that you can do. See, this is no weekend journey. The Christian life is the long haul. It's the marathon race. You know, I told our church on Father's Day a few years ago, and it stuck with me. Anybody can be a good daddy on Father's Day. Anybody can be a great seminary student on syllabus day. People don't understand that when you finish it, you have persevered. Great doctrine of our faith, perseverance, reminds us that it's not us, it is the Lord. We know that theologically, but practically, we want to call it quits. And can I just speak from a perspective of being in the local church all my life, growing up in a godly home? My father attended Southwestern Seminary. I had to go tell Dr. McGorman hello on his behalf. And I told him that my father and I both took Dr. McGorman. We were just separated by 30 years. Of course, Dr. McGorman remembers all of them. And that's the kind of memory he has. But I've been in church life all my life and seen this perspective of church from a staff perspective all my life. And I want you to know that people who give up easily don't understand the toll of long-term commitments. And so generally what happens is the bulk of the weight of responsibility in the local church falls on the few that are faithful. And which then attributes to so many of the faithful becoming more bitter because we're mad at everybody else who did not finish the race. And what happens is you end up carrying not only your load, but the load of everybody else has already jumped ship. And no matter how strong you are, eventually when you're carrying enough of other people's loads, you will wear down. And don't think that you're all that in a bag of chips because you've not reached that point yet. Satan is patient. It will come. When you realize that you're carrying the weight of all the quitters around you, you will get weary. And Jesus said, in fact, count the cost. You wouldn't be sitting here today if you didn't count the cost. Some of you made great calculations and great sacrifice to be where you are. And others of you, it was no sacrifice at all. It was just the next logical step. And maybe you don't appreciate what the person next to you is going through to get to the same seat that they find themselves in as well. It's kind of like, though, that the reason we see that so many church plants fail. Anybody can start a church well, but who can finish? Anybody can start, have a great wedding, but so few have a great marriage. You know, anybody can start the semester, but who finishes the semester strong? It's easier to have a beautiful baby than a godly child. It's easier to begin than to end. And here's a man who's fighting the biggest fight he's ever had, 120,000. And he has seen God prevail. It's not that he's sinful. It's not that he's immature. And yet he's losing the greatest support. He just needs a little support. He's lost 22,000 men and they walked away from him. Almost 10,000 men drank water the wrong way. And now he's left with the men of Succoth and Penuel. They're leaving him hanging. And it couldn't be at the worst time. I have some wonderful friends around the world who are church planters. And they'll tell me, Glenn, it just doesn't seem right. I mean, everything's on go. God is moving ahead. Everything is great. And all we need is just a little bit more to finish strong. And I got a word today that this church is no longer supporting us. And this church will no longer support us. And next year we're going to end our cooperative program. Gifts are no longer coming our way. And what are we to do? You're weary, but you're winning. You're in the biggest battle you've ever had, and now you're losing the only hope, the only help you ever had. Now, I know what you're thinking. If you're like me and I face some of those battles, I've told the Lord, now, Lord, wait a minute. If this would have happened 2 years ago, I got it. Because I was stronger then, Lord. I had less responsibilities, Lord. I could have made it. Why didn't this tragedy strike a couple of years ago? God, if you'd give me 6 more months, then I can handle this kind of battle. Please hear me. The odds are so stacked against you so that you will know beyond the shadow of a doubt that if it had not been the Lord on your side, there would be no victory. That's what he wants you to understand. You say, wait a minute, you don't get what I'm doing. I'm a single parent working my way through seminary. God bless you, but I'm here not to have pity on you. I'm here to tell you, keep on keeping on. He said, well, Glenn, I'm holding 3 jobs to raise these 5 kids that God's given me. How in the world are we going to finish? How in the world are we going to? You need to understand that that setback is all part of God's plans. It's to remove any semblance of leaning on man, including yourself, and lean fully on God. When you feel like quitting, but you get back up again, it's kind of like Job in 13. Remember when he said, though he slay me, yet I will trust in him. You can't quit. You've come too far. God has carried you too far. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 3, a fantastic text. Though the vision tarry, wait for it because it will surely come. It will not tarry long. The enemy is fighting you so hard because he knows you're so close. You're so close to the end. The closer you get to the end, the greater the struggle will be. That's where he's at. His men are looking to him. They are looking to him to hear from God, to supply their needs. And he wants to tell them, be encouraged, guys. We're this close. We've got too much invested. We are not going to quit when we're so close to winning. But secondly, I want you to notice, I read verse 22 and 23, and this is what this text means to me. Don't quarrel when you're weary. I love this text. He didn't argue. He didn't put up a fight with the wrong foe. He didn't fight when he was tired with the wrong foe. See, Gideon's an Israelite. Let me go back with you, chapter 8, verse 1. Look at this. The men of Ephraim said to him, why have you done this to us? Not calling us when you went to fight against the Midianites? And they argued with him violently. They argued with him violently. So he said to them, what I have done now compared to you? Is not the gleaning of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? God handed over to you, Oreb and Zeb, the two princes of Midian. What was I able to do compared to you? When he said this, their anger against him subsided. You see, Gideon is trying to get support of the Ephraimites to fight the Midianites, but the Ephraimites are not ready to help him. Gideon and his 300 had just killed 120,000 men of Midian, and they've just got these 15,000 left. And Gideon simply saying, men of Succoth and Penuel, please just give us a little bit of bread and water. And you know what they said to him? Excuse me, but why didn't you seek our help to begin with? You ever notice that sometimes the people that can help you the most are your greatest critics? And instead of offering you help, they offer you criticism. Don't be looking around and don't be writing people's names down. But you know, that's what we do in Christianity. See, Gideon doesn't answer that argument. In fact, what he does is, I love this, he goes straight to the heart of the matter. And he simply says this, hey, guys, listen, you know, whatever I've accomplished, it's nothing to what you've done. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that great? Because envy is best removed by humility. A soft answer turneth away wrath. And so what Gideon's able to do is he's able to turn the tables of them gently. You ever had somebody be so jealous of what you're doing and the blessings that God has given to you that you've had to stop your crisis and come along to their insecurities and coddle them? You didn't have time for that. You didn't want to do that. You don't have the energy to do that. But they're so insecure. And Gideon stands here as a great, great model of self-denial and humility. The Ephraimites had given vent to their passion in a wrong way, obviously, in a wrong form of freedom of speech. And yet, could I just remind you that reason runs quite low when the criticism flies quite high. Don't fight the wrong foe when you're weary. Don't quarrel when you're weary. If you're married, you already know this. I hope you know this. Don't get into discussions when you should be going to bed. It's not good. It's not going to be good. It's going to end up bad. The stingy men of Succoth and Penuel, they had something to prove. And they'd already said no to God's vision and no to God's mighty man, Gideon. But now that they've seen great success, they want to come on board. And people who have no vision, by the way, beyond themselves, believe in nothing, they change nothing, they renew nothing, they support nothing, by the way, and they'll end up with nothing, accomplishing nothing. But Gideon and his warriors kept going. They said, you know what? We were planning a fast anyway. Well, I don't know if they said that, but they moved forward without getting any help from the men of Succoth and the men of Penuel. See, the men of Succoth, they had hid behind their flesh, their own power. And yet, what does he tell them? He says, I'm going to tear your flesh from these thorns and briars. The men of Penuel, they hid behind the tower in their town. And yet the Lord tells us through his word that he's going to tear down that tower. Anything that you're leaning on, that's substituting for God's strength to lean on, God says, I'll take that out. And he'll use God's mighty men to do so. Be wary when you're weary. If your body's weak, I can guarantee this, your fuse is short. Don't argue. Remember Gideon, he didn't try to stop those 22,000 men. He'd already learned that lesson. Now, don't you know, listen, I pastor a great church, but I'm here to tell you, if the majority of that church one day just started walking away, every ounce of my being would want to come up after them and go, hey, listen, can we address whatever reason you're leaving? Is it that staff member? Is it something I said? Hang on just a second. I mean, 22,000 men left, and you know what he did? He didn't even wave goodbye. He looked at who he had left. And he wasn't depressed by that. So he's already matured enough to know that God is going to prevail. And sometimes the only way that you know that God is on your side is when nobody else is on your side. Sometimes it's better, by the way, to have fewer people with you who are committed to victory God's way than a whole lot of people who need a Band-Aid every time they stub their toe. And I know what you're thinking. Well, Dr. Stone, you can say anything you want because you pastor a big church in East Texas. I'm just here to tell you, I believe this with all my might. I would rather have the godly few than the flippant many. God said, he's with me. God told Gideon he was with him. God tells you he is with you. God is with you. Students, listen, when you can't even keep those eyes open and you're getting ready for that final exam, God is with you. He's brought you too far. Don't argue with him. Study, get it done, finish strong. Just because you feel alone does not mean that you are. Right. Gideon had learned all he needed was God. And isn't that great how he ended the Great Commission, that he is with us always, even to the end of the age. He is with us always. He said, well, Glenn, what else is there to learn? Well, I ended with verse 28 because I think this is a beautiful way to end. So we've learned that we're not going to give up. But I want you to understand something. Here's what we need to do at the very end of things. Be quiet while you wait. 40 years of peace. We've just read a saga that may have taken a couple of weeks. But in one verse, the book of Judges tells us everything was silent for 40 years. I don't know about you, but I'm dying to know what happened for 40 years. I mean, it's like I'm watching the show that's no longer in the air, but 24, where the whole show is like minute by minute by minute by minute. And then all of a sudden we check out and verse 28 says, peace for 40 years. Let me tell you what happened during that 40 years. Every generation has their own battles to fight. Every generation. For Gideon's 300, their blessing was their problem. They were chasing down what they had left to finish. The blessing of God using them in a powerful way to whoop up on the masses was the very crux of holding back the finishing to that same race. They're tired. They're still reaching out for that victory, and they just want to call it quits. They've already done more than anything that any peer has ever done that they've read about in their lifetime or in the history of Israel. Isn't enough enough? They feel like fainting. But they just kept on fighting. And then all the Bible tells us is after that great saga, there's peace for 40 years. I want to encourage you something this morning, that weariness, it's just a sign that you're almost finished. It's a good sign. It just means you're almost finished. Don't quit now. You have to have the discipline to keep fighting despite the feeling of fainting. I know what you're thinking. Oh, I'm just so hungry. Hey, they were too. Bread and water, that's all they needed. Just a little bit. Do you remember the great story in Job? When I love the phrase, and he said, my bow was renewed in my hand. You know what he's talking about? Those of you who hunt, you get this. And my dad taught me this when I was young, and I would sit there and hold a gun or bow and I'm trying to aim it in. And after a while, if you hold it too long without pulling the trigger, what happens? You start shaking more. And then you say, well, I gotta be still before I pull the trigger. And then because just take the shot. Because after a while, you're just getting weary of holding the gun. And I love what Job says. Listen, when I felt like giving up, there's this second wind that came over me and it pulled the trigger at just the right time. It's that second wind Isaiah talked about. Those who trust in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Boy, that's a great text. We could all preach and teach. So much to learn there. Let me just close with this illustration. My wife likes to run. She doesn't love to run. She likes to run. She likes it because she knows what it does for her. And of course, she's got four crazy boys in the house and make me want to get out too. And so she enjoys a morning run. Now, she's not a marathon runner. I wouldn't be surprised one day that she does run a marathon. And we've got some great friends who are marathon runners. And, you know, they got the stickers on the back of their car, that 26.2. I saw one the other day I'm going to get for my car, 0.0. I can't wait to get that one. I'm going to put that on my car. But, you know, when I'm running, the other day I chased a couple of our boys down the block. And I don't know, just ran a few hundred yards. And this old 40-year-old, I kind of was a little winded. And I realized, man, I'm kind of out of shape. But it was fun to sprint a little bit, but there's no way. I'm just not a long distance kind of guy. So I spend some time with people that can tell me these stories. I've never experienced it, but you know, I just jog a little bit. My legs start burning. My chest is on fire and I just want to sit down. I just feel like fainting. But runners tell you that there is this second wind. And some of you know what I'm talking about. And it's when you look down the road and you see how far you know how far you've been and you can see how far you got to go. And then all of a sudden you got the second wind. Well, according to a great friend of ours who's a marathon racer, they said that, you know, that second wind takes place anywhere between that 16th and 20th mile. And they said, we call that the grind. That's just when you grind it out, is what they're saying. But those endorphins start kicking in and you start saying, I can do this. Again, this is not a personal illustration. I have not made it that far ever. But from what I understand, that 16 to 20 mile is when those endorphins start saying, you can make it, you can finish strong. That's the grind, and you got to grind it out. But then there's a second stage of that second wind, and they say it's like between mile 22 and 26. Your body is moving your legs, but your mind is checked out. Your mind is telling you, what in the world were you thinking? Why did you sign up for this thing? Why did you pay money to get in this race? You are just crazy. What is the point? And you're having this mental argument. Don't you know Gideon's having that argument with those 300 starving men behind him, but inside his mind, he's having that argument with himself. What in the world was I thinking? I'm almost there. And then you hit that wall. And you know you just got a little bit more to go. And it's that goal that keeps you moving. You moved out of the grind stage. Now you're into the goal stage. And you almost can see it. You're so close. And then our runner friends tell us that the longest mile in that marathon is the last 2/10. Because your eyes have set on the goal. It's no longer the goal that's causing you to put your foot in front of the other. It's not even the finish line. It's the glory of being done. And you remember what Hebrews said? Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder, perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him, that glory, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. It's the glory that tells you you can finish. It's the glory of God awaiting you and I as we fight when we're fainting. Don't quit. I know you're weary, but we know who wins, and we're on the winning side. Amen. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to this audio from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. If you want more information on our academic programs, or if you would like to support our mission, visit www.swbts.edu.